Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Cheaper Than Therapy, a podcast that journeys into conversations that demystify, destigmatize, and desensitize what goes on both inside the therapy room and in daily life.
I'm Vanessa Bennett.
And I'm Danae Logan.
And we are seekers, soul sisters, and holders of sacred space. Every week, we sit down for soul-provoking conversations with fellow seekers, thought leaders, change makers, and even real people during live coaching sessions as they navigate the hard work it takes to be a human.
This is Cheaper Than Therapy.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Cheaper Than Therapy. So today we're going to kind of sort of answer a question that I think maybe dive into a bigger conversation that we were having, we're always having offline. So one of the questions that a listener sent me was being interested in us talking about their partner checking out other people when they're out with them in public. I.e. taking a few looks at a person, not just one glance. I've repeatedly told my boyfriend this bothers me. He really tried reining it in for a few months, but now he's back to looking at other women when we are out. He's just about 100% stopped looking at porn the past few months, as that also bothered me. I feel like he really struggles to control his impulses. We are at a stalemate. He's now denying it's happening. I'm definitely sure it is. It's very hurtful as everything else in the relationship is basically perfect. I don't want to break up, but I'm feeling worse and worse as time goes on. And I feel like my health is being affected. Thank you for your work.
Like, you're not going to like my answer.
Me either.
You know, I think if your health is affected, let's start there, by the amount of energy and thought processing you are putting into what your partner, boyfriend is looking at or focused on, that is a really like flashing indication to me that your focus needs to be brought back to yourself, that you are using what he is doing, not doing, thinking about, not thinking about as a distraction versus really focusing on you, your own life, your own goals, your own passions. And I think that a lot of this, I would bet money, would be alleviated if you stopped putting so much of your energetic focus on this person and what he is and isn't doing.
Yeah. Said very eloquently. You always say things more eloquently when you start than me starting. So,
that's true.
Yeah, this question reminds me of, so John, my partner, did a answered a question that somebody had submitted. And he was sitting next to me. And I was doing work and he answered it. And then he said, Vanessa, what do you think about this? And just captured my audio. And so basically somebody asked, you know, a similar type question, which was, what do you do or how do you handle, you know, your partner having friends of the opposite sex? And John had me answer it because he knows I have a very hard, like, I just have a very strong feeling about this topic, right? And so for those of you who have been listening for a long time, you can probably guess that my answer was very much in line of, we don't get to control people. Mm-hmm. We don't get to tell people what they're allowed to do or who they're allowed to be friends with. And to go back to what you were saying, it's really an opportunity for us to bring the focus back on ourselves, about our anxiety around not being in control, what that brings up for us, right? There's just so many rich opportunities and deep questions that can come up from this type of activation that go so far beyond just the surface, like, oh, it's about my partner, right? And like their behavior and what I feel about their behavior. And I feel like when we put the emphasis on that, we miss the plot. Like we're missing out on the opportunity to do the deeper work, which is what you were saying. So I said as much, probably not in the nicest way because he caught me off guard. And his followers went bananas in the comments. Mm-hmm. And I had a moment where I remember I sent it to you and I said, there's this feeling that I have that for some reason, if we had posted a similar Q&A on one of our pages, I don't think we would have gotten the same types of responses or the same level of very obvious activation to what I was saying, right? We would have gotten some for sure, but not to the level that I felt, you know, that people responded to his. And I guess you and I had kind of been pontificating around like, why do we think that is, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's because so much of our focus is on identity work and codependency recovery, right? As being part of identity work, that our community is kind of almost poised and ready for you and I to turn it around and make them think about it through that lens, that it doesn't feel so like confronting almost when they hear us say it because they're already kind of in it with us. But it does feel similar to this question. Like, again, this larger universal, I feel like these kinds of Q&As come in very frequently. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, two things are coming up for me as I hear you say that. The first is, you know, the thing that I often struggle with, and this is just like my perspective that is different than so many people, but it's kind of how I feel about relationships. I feel like we get into relationships with people who behave and show up in life and in the world in a very specific way. And then so often we decide that it is our life's mission and how we want to like spend our energy and our time attempting to change the things about them that we find less than desirable, which essentially is the equates to molding someone into someone that we would find more lovable. And, you know, in this case, I have seen men and sort of witnessed men flirt with me or other women in a way that I would like in front of their partner in a way that I'm like, oof, I would not love that if my partner did that. And here's the big and. I would not be attracted to someone who behaved that way, right? So I say that to say quite often, I find that like that type of behavior didn't just start all of a sudden. That is normally who that person was. And for whatever reason, as you were entering into relationship with them, you decided that's something I can change or modify, or it's not that big of a deal, or whatever the story is you told yourself about that behavior. But I have yet to see anyone make substantial behavioral changes because someone nagged them into submission. So if this is a very flirtatious person and that is the way that they show up in the world, I promise you, like they will change that behavior when they decide to, not because you have gotten upset enough that it no longer feels like something that they want to do. It's just not the way human animals work, right? And I think that there are so many of the behavioral orientations and relationship orientations that would say, no, you just like need to find a more effective way to communicate how that makes you feel to your partner. And maybe, but also I think when you're in a relationship with someone that like fundamentally isn't like in tune to that or doesn't like feel some kind of way when you do that, that speaks volumes about like their level of attunement and empathy and all of the things. It doesn't make them a bad person. It just means that maybe they don't experience relationships and like what a relationship container should be in the same way that you do, right?
Yeah. And I made a note when you were talking about when you were saying molding them into somebody that we think they should be. I also thought about this idea of molding them into somebody who makes us feel more comfortable. So mm-hmm. I need to prove my worth. I need to prove my value. And so if I can get you to change this thing about yourself, that tells me that I'm lovable. That tells me that I'm worthy, right? Because clearly I'm worthy of your love if you're going to stop this behavior for me, mm-hmm. right? And again, that's about us. To bringing it back to self, right? That's about me needing somebody to act a certain way to make me feel a certain way, which is codependency, right? Yes. And so I would challenge that it's also about that. I love what you're saying. It's like we have to all decide what our values are in our relationships and then pay more attention to us getting into relationships with people who either align or don't align with our values, right? Because I am that flirtatious person. I mm-hmm. am that person. I've always been that person, right? Mm-hmm. It's who I am. It's my personality. I'm a toucher. I'm a hand on the arm kind of person. Man, woman, doesn't matter. I call everybody babe, hun, sweetie. It's man, woman, doesn't matter. Some people might find that offensive. It's who I am. Right. And so you're either going to know that about me and that's going to not bother you about me because it doesn't bother you or it is going to bother you. Right. And if it bothers you, I would actually say it's more about you not getting in relationship with me than telling me that I need to stop doing that. Right. Because that's not going to feel like love to me. It's going to feel like control. It's going to feel like you're trying to be my parent. You're shaming me for who I am. I mean, listen, I feel the same way about porn. Like, people have different perspectives on it, but when you're telling somebody, I don't want you to watch porn, I want you to change who you are. That person has to be, listen, you could say the same thing about somebody who's got a problem with alcohol. Mm-hmm. I need you to stop drinking to be in this relationship with me. Well, you're not their parent, right? Like this person is their own autonomous being and they get to decide. And if they have to stop something or give something up about themselves to be in relationship with you, bet they're going to be resentful and they're not going to be in that relationship in a fully loving way because it didn't come from them. It didn't come from their kind of inner desire or, you know, inner willingness or whatever word you want to use.
Yeah, I feel like it's just like the sustainability aspect for me of whatever these changes are. Like someone can modify a behavior for a period of time, mm-hmm. but
which this person even
you know, I saw this like meme. I saw this meme that was so funny of like a therapist sitting with someone, you know, complaining about her boyfriend, and she was like, "Good, dump him." And she was like, "What? No, I'm just." Oh, she's like, that. "Good, dump him. All of this is optional." And I feel like we have just so normalized, mm-hmm. like, and listen, I'm not saying anybody should be in a relationship with someone with a substance abuse problem. Of course not. But it is optional for you to stay here. Facts. Like, I get it. Like, people will say, well, I have children with this person. I have all of these variables that make it impossible for me to not be in relationship. And I promise you, I will give you a list of options for how you can make it work for you to not be in relationship with this person. You might not be as comfortable as mm-hmm. you are in this home and in this relationship with this person, but tons of people make it work and tons of people do leave situations mm-hmm. that are no longer tenable for them, right? But yeah, I think this thing that is dying is like in alignment with what you said, that I get to like form someone into someone that makes me feel like pacified and comfortable mm-hmm. all the time. And so funny, I just came off of a workshop where we were talking about love and relationships. And I said something and there was like an audible gasp in the room. It was hilarious. But I was like, I don't believe in emotional affairs. And they were like, and I was like, I don't believe in them. I don't think they're a thing. And what's so funny, V, is I used you as an example of why I don't believe in them. You know, I said, I had a friend who Vanessa and I were very close to and got into a relationship and you know, I was not a threat to this person because I was a married woman, but Vanessa was. And, you know, I watched how that played out. And it's like to say that someone is allowed to have a certain level of emotional intimacy with someone, like you either trust someone and their intentions or you don't. And if I don't trust your intentions, why am I in a relationship with you? This is optional, folks. Like we don't have to be together. But I think that, you know, seeing like, and we lost that friend. And at the end of his life, you didn't get to spend time with him. Nope. And it broke my heart. And I was like, the fact that we feel like we get to rob people of connection and people that have been like family to them because it makes me uncomfortable when I have just entered your life is fucked up. I'm sorry. It is. And I think that it's like, it's time for us to grow up a little bit. Like, yes, this makes me feel like upset and afraid. And you know what? There are ways for me to do some work around that. It's
actually a thing. Would say
good. Good. There are thou work to be done.
Good. Yeah. I mean, I think that talking about that friend in particular is huge. And I think that does, it would be impossible to say that that doesn't impact on a visceral level the way that I see how we show up in dynamics and relationships, right? And why that conversation around is my partner allowed to be friends with somebody opposite sex makes me like want to flip tables, right? Because y'all, this isn't like a once in a blue moon situation. Danae and I literally, like you said, we lost somebody. They lost their lives. And so it's like exactly what you just said. You are coming in and telling somebody that they can't have a deep, intimate connection with somebody because it makes you feel uncomfortable. And I'm sorry, but that's selfish. It just is. And I also think that this is part of what you and I talk about, and this is a big activation point for a lot of people, is us continuing to push against this idea of ownership in relationships, right? Especially in like our heteronormative, mononormative way of existing in our culture. Like we expect one person to be everything, to be our everything, to fulfill our every need. And anything that that person does outside of that two-party system is seen as a threat to that two-party system, right? And so we really rob people of being able to have deeply intimate connections. I've even looked and seen how this affects same-sex relationships, like friend relationships, right? Because I will actually pull myself back from having deep relatedness with my friends who are the same sex because it somehow takes away from my romantic partnership. It takes time away from them. It takes intimacy away from them or whatever, right? And so we place these romantic partnerships on this pedestal in the center of everything. And it impacts the way that we create community, the way that we create support around ourselves, the types of enriched and fulfilled lives that we could potentially have with a community around us. And I just think it's time for us to continue to break this shit down.
Yeah, it's just, it's so based in fear. You know, I'm in a supervision group with a group of like 30 couples therapists, right? And it's just fascinating to listen to the conversations that we have every month and like how much the like baseline paradigm is so like, keep this container together at all costs. And, you know, something that my mentor said to me was like, you know, Danae, you really approach this work from a different perspective because you've sort of like had the felt experience of, yes, there was a point at which I was afraid of something dissolving. And I don't hold that fear anymore because I came out on the other side and saw that I was okay. Right. Mm. And I think there's a way that if we collectively just normalize, like, what am I so afraid of, right? Like, get into the fear a little bit, like, workshop it. What does it mean? What is the story I'm telling myself about what it means? Like, where do I hide out in the space of, like, as long as this person is here, then I'm safe, then I'm enough, then I'm something. And the tremendous burden that that puts on not only another person, but the relational container. And that, like, of course it starts to feel less than fulfilling. And of course there's no aliveness and eros. And challenge in that, because it's just like, of course there's a deadening. Anytime mm-hmm. there's a fear, there's a constriction and like I contract. Anytime there's love and there's spaciousness and curiosity, all of a sudden we grow. But I think to your point, if I believe that this nuclear family system that we've been operating in is the only truth that could conceivably be fulfilling and a way to live. And frankly, like I was saying the other day, like, I don't know who had fulfillment in this nuclear family system. Like, show me where that was, because maybe I missed the memo, but I'm pretty sure for women for like centuries, that has not been the case. Mm-hmm. And now we're like really starting to get honest about the fact that it hasn't been fulfilling really for men either, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, can we stop with the like performance that this is actually making anybody happy to like hide out in a bunker together forever and ever? As long as we're here and not looking at anybody, that will keep us safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find too, I mean, I guess one of the last things I'll say about this is, and I say this to all of my clients, but also I just say this all the time, right? Like, what other purpose is there in relationships other than to aid in our growth, right? Like, if there is not soul stimulation, I don't want it. And that goes for all of my relationships, right? Mm-hmm. Romantic or otherwise. And me attempting to control what you do and who you are in order to keep me feeling okay is actually negating, cutting off, deadening that soul for work, right? Because you're not actually supposed to be comfortable all the time. That's not life, right? And if I'm attempting to use another person to make me feel okay and safe, I'm also hiding, like you were saying earlier, the idea of hiding. I'm hiding from the work. I'm hiding from the growth. I'm hiding from the potential of what life and relationships could be, because I'm so concerned with just not feeling upset. Right. And I don't know.
Yeah. And I would argue most of the people who live in this type of energetic that we're discussing are very rarely comfortable. Like, I actually do believe that, and we talked about this so much last week, like, life can be so much simpler than we're making it. Mm-hmm. And your life actually can feel good mm-hmm. most of the time. But that's yep. your work to make it feel that way. And most of the time it doesn't, because of a story you're telling yourself that's making you feel terrified or agitated or like you need to control something to experience some sort of externalized safety, right? But like most of the people who are running around like this in this question, worried about what their spouse partner is saying to another person, doing or not doing, how they're meeting their needs or not meeting them, are not comfortable. They're living a very agitated life. And I would say like introducing a whole lot of complexity that just like really doesn't need to be there from my perspective. Like, go do something else.
Well, that other
than
also
worry about what they're doing.
That is it. That opens a whole other can of worms around what some might argue is like an addiction to drama, right? Like, some might argue that for a lot of us mm-hmm. in this culture that we've created, we're fucking bored. We're overstimulated in one aspect and we're spiritually understimulated, right? And we don't have passion and we don't have purpose and we don't have all of these greater connections to things right above and outside of ourselves. And so we look for things in our lives to focus on and stir shit up in, right? In order to give us a sense of aliveness. And so going back to what you were saying about like, go do something, like look inside yourself. Yeah, I would say if you find yourself consistently, and this person is saying it's actually affecting their health, consistently putting this much focus on something in order to create this feeling of like anxiety in myself, that's a really big indication that we need to find purpose, that we need to do some real kind of soul expansion type work.
Yeah. I mean, I think you and I were talking about this the other day. I think I've sat with so many couples, and one thing that I've sort of seen in terms of a pattern is anytime there is like a deep dissatisfaction with my partner and the way that they are meeting my needs, V, never fails. There's a lack of a sense of mission. Mm-hmm. There's a lack of a sense of like, here is what I am doing in my life that I feel excited and passionate about and good about myself because I'm doing it and it makes me feel proud of me. And it's just this person becomes the really convenient place to put like all of that energy. I just like project it on them versus like bringing the focus back to me and how can I fill myself with a sense of life force and aliveness mm-hmm. and that thing that I'm trying to energetically outsource from another person.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know this will be somewhat activating for people to hear and also
I love you.
My therapist says with love.
Good.
Good. Be activated. This is it, y'all. This is the juicy stuff. This is where the work is. Like, don't shy away from the activation. Use it as the place to look into the mirror and sit with yourself and say, woof, I need to ask myself some hard questions, right? I need to stop focusing outward and start focusing inward.
Yeah. I think the relationship templates where we believe that another person is going to save us from ourselves are dying. Mm-hmm. And it's just, from my perspective, going to be a lot more normalized that like love means that you are like the soft place to land. You are like the icing on my cake. You are the beautiful extra. But my life is made up of so many beautiful ingredients that are not about this like one energetic dynamic between me and another person, because it's just really created deeply distorted dynamics that actually have absolutely nothing to do with love.
Mm, amen. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Cheaper Than Therapy.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share it with a friend, subscribe, and give us a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And if you want to connect with us more, find us on Instagram at Cheaper Than Therapy, the podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.